All right, so we are holding. I'm 12 of an hour, so about a quarter of the way down the Omud by the two dots. Okay, we talked about in the Mishnah, the Machlokas for Mayor of Yehuda, whether a Goy is able to donate, is able to pledge an Erech or not, and that led us into a more general question about them donating things for the Beis Mikdash. So, more on this topic of Goyim donating things that usually they wouldn't. Omud of Yehuda Omud Suppose that a goy separates truma from his pile of grain. So we're not talking about if a yid has a pile of grain and he delegated the goy to take truma. We know that's not valid. We know ma'atem b'nei bris, ha'shlochachem b'nei bris, a shliach for truma has to be a yid. We're talking about a goy himself has a pile of grain and he voluntarily separated truma. Well, that's what we have to find out. What we have to do, there is actually a machloikas whether, if we're going to say that, there's depending on the situation, but there is a machloikas actually if we say that you do give it to the Kohen, which is one circumstance we're going to say over here, does it mean it actually has a dinim of truma, for example, that a Zohar cannot eat it, or maybe it's only, maybe it's not, maybe okay, we give it to the Kohen, but maybe it would just be considered a present for the Kohen. Okay, anyway. So Boidkinos.
The Chumash. What
does
it say
exactly?
How does it say that
Yidden has to be? It says, B'nai Yisrael. So we know that only Jews are chayiv in it midaraisa. So the pure the question is, a goy separated. Boidkinosa. So we have to check out what the goy's intention was. E b'das Yisrael Akusha. If he separated it based on the das of a yid, meaning basically that he says, I'm separating truma the way that a Jew does it, wherever a Jew's truma goes, I'm above a manalas, by the two dots. Are you in the wrong with that, sir?
No.
Okay. So Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, over to Chavim Shefesh Truma Mekuryo, if a goy separates Truma from his pile of grain, Boit Kinoise, we asked him, what? Okay, it's fine, we open the window. So, Boidkinoisa, so we have to ask the goy what his intention was. Im omer b'das Yisrael v'frisha, if he says that he did it the way that a yid does it, meaning he says, wherever a Jew's truma goes, I want mine to go also, or Rashi says another explanation, that a Jew told me that I should be taking truma, and to not from the koy, and then you give it to a koy. The imlav, and if not, tu'una gniza, then that truma has to be put in gniza. You can't use it, you have to put it in gniza, because we have to be concerned that maybe he has in mind that he wants to give it to Hekdesh. Nowadays, we don't have Hekdesh, so we don't have Beis Mikdash. So we can't use it, because it would be me to use it.
What happens if he thinks he wants to give it to Rabbi
Zara? So the Torah actually explains that when we say over here, Shema B'Libra L'Shamayim, the Torah explains that Libra L'Shamayim may be a euphemism for he has in mind Rabbi Zara. That's exactly the reason why you don't take it from him and instead you put it in Gneza. But most of the other Rishonim don't understand it that way. They mean, they understand L'Shamayim to mean literally, like Rashi, for example, says over here, he may have had in mind that he wants it for Hekdesh. And we're talking nowadays, Hekdesh is also Bana.
If that's the case, I doubt it's
not
that true.
Not that true, yeah.
Why do we say that for Yarin, for instance, that he wants to offer it to the Shem Shemayim?
That's fine. If he wants to bring a korban of his own, he's entitled to. We learned from Zvachim. A goy is allowed to bring a korban even nowadays. But if he takes truma from his pile of grain, and he doesn't say the das is thrilled in Kashtia, we have to be concerned that maybe he wanted to go to as Hekdesh to our Beis Mikdash. And we don't have a Beis Mikdash. Hekdesh is also behind us.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's
the point. Both genosings, we ask him.
Oh, we
although, to... yeah, that's what he said, we asked him. Although there was one of the Achronim who argues that maybe we can't ask him, because maybe then it wouldn't be Messiah Kopi Chumai. So he said maybe Bird Kunosin, we asked other people, we asked around what kind of person, whatever. The point is that we check it out, yeah. Okay, so the most is Mace. We have a contradiction. A Braitha says, over to Chodim Shin's Nadir Koda, if a guy donates a beam to a shul, the shame cost of Allah. Now, accepting the beam itself, now you actually have, there is actually a discussion among the poskim whether you can accept a donation from a goy for a shul. We learned yesterday, as far as the Beis Mikdash, that we say that the chila not, and basoif, we said you can't take a dover hamikuyam, a defined object which is visible in the final building, which according to the Ben Gershom includes the building, includes the beam, according to Rashi, it doesn't, but a dover she'enim asuyam could. So the discussion, does the same thing apply to a shul? The consensus of most poskim is that it does not. That with a shul, there's less of an issue. That a goy could be menadiv. Same in Meisim B'chol Yom, that you have sometimes that goyim are menadiv, even sometimes you hear faces where goy, for example, donate a building for a shul. That's truly a double mesuyim. Yeah. Okay. In general, the consensus of most poskim is you can accept it. Anyway, so in this case, he donated a beam for a shul. Fine, no problem with that. The problem is B'shem Kosov Olecha. There's a name, he wrote a name of Hashem on this beam.
The
goy? The goy, yeah. Maybe he had a Jew write it, maybe he wrote it himself, whatever. So again, we have to check him out. We have to find out what he had in mind when he did that. If he says, I donated this beam, I set it aside in the same way that a Jew would, meaning that he knows it's not for Hekdesh, he knows it's meant to go to a shul, fine. Then the only problem is the name of Hashem on it. Therefore, therefore you have to cut off the part that has Hashem's name, the Ishtamash B'moser, and you're allowed to use the rest of the beam. You have to cut off the part of Hashem with Hashem's name, Rashi says, Rashi doesn't say, we're going to discuss later in the sugya why you have to cut off the part with Hashem's name, so you have to cut off the part of Hashem's name, the rest of it is mutter to use, the imlav, and if not, if he doesn't say the das, he's throw the fresh here, same thing, to una gneza, we say you have to put it, the whole thing in gneza, chayshin and shem and beliber l'shamayim, because again, you have to be concerned that maybe he meant it to go to Hekdesh, or maybe according to the Torah's explanation that he wrote God, let's say, and he has in mind his gesture or whatever, yeah. So, because for one thing, the Gemara doesn't specify over here that we're talking about only nowadays. And in fact, there are Mepharshim on the Rambam who, for example, who understand that Rambam would understand that these dinim apply in the times when there was a busy Mekdesh as well. So therefore, the Torah, based on that, might say that it's not something limited to nowadays when we have no Hekdesh. It might apply even in those times. Anyway, so time with the Shem Kosov Olel, the Boyer Gneza. So why are we saying that if he didn't say B'das Yisrael, we have to put it in Gneza only because the name of Hashem is written on it? Ha Ein Shem Kosov Olel, implying that if there's no name of Hashem written on it, Loi Boyer Gneza. So it shouldn't need Gneza. So then why in the case of Truma would we say that if he didn't say the Das Yisrael, we right away have to put it in Gneza? Whereas over here with the beam, it seems the only thing that makes us put it in Gneza is if there's a name of Hashem and it wasn't the Das Yisrael. Whereas by Truma, you only require that it wasn't the Das Yisrael. The answer is no. Hu adin da'afagav de'en shen kotvaleh anami boyer Gneza. No, as a matter of fact, the Braita is not necessarily implying that. It may be, even if there's no name of Hashem written on the beam, also, if he doesn't say that it was B'das Yisrael, and therefore we have reason to be concerned that he had in mind Hekdesh, whoever it is, or what have you, also Nami Boyer Gneza, also required Gneza. So why does it mention the case where the name of Hashem is carved on the beam? The Hakam Mashmalon, the Chiddush is the other way around. The Afa got the shame cost of Olea, even if a name of Hashem is written on the beam, and you would think, fine, he says B'das Yisrael, but still you should argue that maybe the entire beam has Kiddusha, and therefore you're not allowed to use it. So the Kiddusha is no. The Afagav, the Shem Kosovo Leo, even if a name of Hashem is written on it, if it was B'das Yisrael, and therefore there's no problem of Hekdesh or Avodah Zarah, or what have you, then fine, Yogur V'Yishtamish B'Moyser. All you have to do is cut off the part with Hashem's name, and you will be allowed to use the rest. Why? The Shem Shaloi B'Mekoymei Lav Kodesh. A name of Hashem that is not that's written, a name of Hashem not in its place is not Kodesh. So what does that mean? It actually has two explanations. One is it means the part where Hashem's name is written has Kedusha, but the rest of the beam does not. So therefore, all you have to do is cut off the part with Hashem's name, and you're good. Because that's what it means. Shem Shaloi B'Mekayim. You understand? The Rashi's first explanation is Shaloi B'Mekayim means the other parts that are not where Hashem's name is. Those parts are mutter, only the part where Hashem's name is also B'Hanah. Rashi's second explanation is Shem Shaloi B'Mekayim is the phrase that goes together, a name of Hashem written out of its proper place, meaning that, now this is a second explanation of Rashi, although he says he prefers the first explanation, that it means, when is a name of Hashem Kodesh? When you write it, for example, on a piece of paper. And when you're writing a pasuk out on a piece of paper, let's say, and it contains Hashem's name. Then the whole piece of paper has kedusha. As opposed, it has at least to the extent of kedusha that you have to put it in shaman, let's say, maybe. But or elikim. No, well, any of the other names of Hashem, but any of the shaman's shaman and pasuk. But like this, when you have a name by itself, and it's not on a piece of paper, it's on a beam, then it has no kedusha at all. No, it's not a normal place to write Hashem's name. You don't normally write Hashem's name on beams. So Rashi says he prefers the first explanation. It doesn't matter the actual medium that it was written on. It doesn't matter whether it's in the context of a pasuk. Hello. It matters whether it was. It matters that only the area where the name was is considered kaddish. The rest is not. Therefore, that's the chiddush of the braisa. You can cut off that part, and you're good. So that's the chiddush of the braisa. Nothing to do with the question of whether if there was no name of Hashem, but it wasn't the Das Yisrael, maybe indeed it would have to be put in Geneva. So that is the halacha, right? Tosfos, by the way, points out a couple of interesting things that come from this. First of all, Tosfos points out, let's say, for example, you're writing a sacred Torah or a tefillin or a mezuzah, and you write Hashem's name in the wrong place. Suppose then that you remove Hashem's name. Now, Tosfos uses the expression v'goreru, which literally means you scrape it away. So you have different achronim talk about the question, does it literally mean you scraped it away, which is on the face of it also anyway, you know, I'll erase the name of Hashem. So does it actually mean they scraped it away, meaning they were over on the Isser and scraped it away? Now the question is, can you write something else there or not? Or the Mishnah Berurah talks about that maybe it actually means they peeled it off. They peeled off that layer of the parchment which with Hashem's name, which fine, would be Mutter. Anyway, Tosfos says, the point is that Tosfos says, if they did that, they wouldn't be allowed to write a different word over there. Because since the name of Hashem was written over there, then it's the equivalent of the name of Hashem written on the beam over here. That whole part becomes also Bana. So similarly over here, then
on one hand, you're saying that the remnant of the beam is not cut off, but just
the remnant of the beam, fine, but the actual area where Hashem's name was has to be cut off and put in Pienza.
Yeah.
So that's the point. Therefore, Tosfos says, so if you're writing a mezuzah or a tefillin or a sefer Torah, and you write Hashem's name in the wrong place, and then you remove that piece with Hashem's name. Let's say, Tosfos uses the expression yigro, which means that he scrapes it off. So does it mean that, or does it mean that he actually peels off that part? Whatever it is, Tosfos says, you wouldn't be able to write any other word there, because once the name of Hashem was written over there, then that spot has to go through.
Gorer,
which means to scrape off.
Okay.
So that's the point. That's why that part of the beam has to be cut off. And that's what we're saying.
Oh, the surface of the beam.
The area of the beam, where Hashem's name is written. You also have, there's a bit of discussion over here among the Achronim, the Chavis Yoyer talks about, has a truva about this, from Moshe Feinstein, has a truva about the question, what about, for example, Chavis Yoyer talks about, let's say, seals that have Hashem's name in it. Famously, for example, the seal of Columbia University has Hashem's name in it, has the name Yud Kei Vav Kei on it. Are you allowed to use that seal? Rabbi Moshe talks about in the Tshuva about, for example, jewelry that has Hashem's name on it. So yeah, it's a big question. Yeah, look it up sometime. Yeah. No, that has to do with Avodah Zarah. I don't know. Okay, anyway, let's go on. Okay, fine. Another din. So this that we're saying, that a shame written in an improper place does not really have such a degree of kedusha, it's not, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah, it's actually a braita, and it's actually a sefrin. Hoyav kotzav al yadoi ha-kelim, suppose the name of Hashem is written on the handle of a utensil, val karei ha-mitzvah, or on the leg of a bed, harei the yogurt, you have to cut off that part, v'yignos, and you put that part with Hashem's name in gniza. So the point is, in other words, the same idea. You don't say the entire bed has to be put in Geniza. So the same way with you, you don't say the entire beam has to be put in Geniza. It's fully been put. Okay. Fine. Now we're going to digress to another topic about tzedakah, which the relevance of it is because in the course of it, we're going to talk about cases where a goy donated something to a shul, which is similar to what we were talking about over here. So, first of all, Omer Rav Barabo, Ha'omer Sela Zula Tzedakah. If a person says, a yid says, this, I'm going to give this coin to tzedakah. So the din is mutter l'shanoisa. He is allowed to exchange it. Now, what does that mean? Rashi explains that l'shanoisa means he doesn't have to give davka that particular coin. He would be allowed to use that coin for some other purpose, and later on he'll pay an equivalent coin. It doesn't matter. That's what we're going to discuss. But Rav Nachman is telling us that you're allowed to do that. Mutter l'shanoisa. With that said, though, the Rambam writes that Advaz understands the Rambam to be saying that l'shanoisa doesn't mean that you're allowed to spend that coin and use it later. It just means that you would be allowed to give a different coin, but not that you spend this one first. Now the common thought when Rav Nachman said this in la'asmoi ein la'acher loy, that it only means for himself but not for somebody else, which means Rashi says that they thought it means that. I'm going to start trying to find next week. Rashi says that the Chacham... What? No, because people still want to come to our thing. But, yeah, whatever. Anyway, they thought to say that when Rav Nachman is saying this din, that they meant you would be, let's take with Rashi's explanation, that you're allowed to actually spend that coin and then use it, and then use a different coin for tzedakah. They thought to say that it's only atzmo, you would be allowed for yourself, that you'll spend it, and later on you'll give another coin to tzedakah. Ava la'achar loy, but not for somebody else. You wouldn't be allowed, let's say, to lend it to somebody else. Because, Rashi says, the reason is, because let's say, when you first designated the coin of the tzedakah, you can say you had in mind that in case you need it for some other purpose, then you're going to be allowed to use it. Like you made it hektish, let's say, al tnai, that you'll still be allowed to use it, but not necessarily until you didn't think at the time that you're going to be lending another person money. Rabbi Gershom gives a different reason. He says the reason is because for yourself, you know, you made the neder of tzedakah, so you're going to know it's on your mind that you have to give it to tzedakah. On the other hand, if you lend it to another person, he's not necessarily going to be in such a hurry to pay back because he didn't make the neder. It's not on his head that he has to. So therefore, so they thought to say that there would be that distinction. However, Itmar, but they said, Omer of Ami, Omer of Yesen, and actually, Bein La'achmei, Bein La'achar. You actually would be allowed to spend it yourself or lend it to somebody else as long as afterwards you pay tzedakah an equal amount. Or again, according to the Radvaz's understanding of the Rambam, you would be allowed to spend another coin, but not that you spent this one first.
So the halacha is that you can,
whether for yourself or for others. But wait, we're not done. Okay. Omer of Ze'era, lo shonu ela de omer alai. Now all of that only applies when he said about this coin, hare alai. If he said, he didn't use the word zu, there was an obligation on me to give a coin to tzedakah. That's when we say that he'd be able to use it and then later on give another one. Aval omer hare zu. But if he said hare zu, then like you said, de'ena bori l'mespe, then he has to give that actual coin, because that actual coin is what he said hare zu on. On the other hand, maskif la rava, but rava asks on that doesn't seem logical. Adraba ipcha misabra, on the contrary, we should take the view the other way around. We should say there's more reason to argue the other way around, that he should be more allowed to if he said hare zu than if he said hare olai. The logic is, if he said hare zu l'tzedaka, you should argue mishtamishba, we should allow him to use it. Because what is that going to accomplish? If he uses that very same coin, he is chayav b'achriyosa. He is going to be responsible to make up that coin. He is going to be responsible, like if he spent that coin, so he knows hare olai, then he has an obligation. Because, like this, if he says hare zu, when he uses that coin, in effect, once he says hare zu, the coin already belongs to tzedakah. Therefore, he is like a shomer on that coin. And if he now goes and uses that coin for his own purposes, he becomes like a shomer who did shlichus yad in a pikadin, where the din is that if a shomer uses the pikadin, which he wasn't allowed to do, it's called shlichus yad, the din is he now becomes the owner of that pikadin in the sense that he's chayav for anything that happens there. Even let's say he's a shomer socher. A shomer socher is potter for almost anything that would happen to the pikadin. He's potter for gneva, aveda, oinsin, etc. But if he was shlichus yad, he becomes chayav in everything.
Means
that he misused it. Means that he used it for his own purposes. So like this, if he says hare zu, you could argue he is a shomer on that point. And therefore, in a way, we are better off. We, the Gabori Tzedakah and the Aniyim, are better off if he actually then goes and uses that coin, because then he's a Shalayach Yad, and as a Shalayach Yad in the Kodin, he's Chayav in anything that happens there. Therefore, he's going to have to pay back.
How much do you pay?
Well, he's going to be Chayav the value of it. That's the point.
What?
Yeah, he has done something wrong, but the point is, fine. But one second. Aval omer olai loy. But you could argue, Robert says, on the contrary. If he says hare olai, he's not a shomer on this coin, because there's no actual coin that belongs to Hekdesh. Therefore, there's more reason to say that there's less reason to say that if he uses that coin, you should argue the other way around. He shouldn't be allowed to use the coin in that case, because then what's going to force him to pay up? if he was a shaleach yad b'kodin, then that itself forces him to pay off. If he says harayolai, he may say, okay, harayolai, fine, so I'll give it a year from now, I'll give it 10 years from now, or whatever. Whereas if he was a shomer and shaleach yad b'kodin, he's going to feel bad about it, and he's going to give it. Because in effect, when he says harayzu, he immediately becomes a shomer for it. Because now it belongs to tzedakah, but it's still in his possession.
Right.
So that's the thing. So Rav Ze'era had said that if he says harayzu, he has to give that very same coin and can't change it and can't swap it out. Rava is saying on the contrary, if he says harayzu and then he swaps it out, then he's a shaleach yad b'kodin, and that makes him more liable than he would have if he had been harayolai. So Adarabi, you should say if he says harayzu, there's more reason to allow him to use it. Because if he
is less time, he doesn't have to give the exact coin.
No, but the point is, then he's chayav to make up for what he did.
Yeah, but with another coin.
But but if
how is that more?
No, because the point is, if he says harei olai, then if he says harei olai, either way, he's chayav and achrayus. In other words, the point is like this, Robert said. If he says harei zu, then fine. If he gives that very same coin, so much the better, fine. But if he doesn't, he's still going to have an equal obligation to give another. He's going to have a new obligation based on achrayus to give a different coin. Whereas if he says harei olai, there's no new achrayus whether he uses it or not. So Adarabi, you should say when it creates a new achrayus on him to give, that's when we would allow him to do that. And when is that? When he says harezu. When it doesn't create a new achrayus on him, when he has the same achrayus the whole time, why should we allow him to?
So when he says that harei olai, doesn't have to pay back?
No, he has to pay back, but there's no new achrayus that was created by him sending it. When he says harezu, once he sends it, he now has a new status. Before he was some person who owes a coin to tzedakah, now he is a shomer who committed shlichus yachid. Where he has now a new obligation. He has a new obligation to give that coin to tzedakah.
But the same amount,
but the point still remains. A new obligation has been created by him doing this. As opposed to with harei olai, no new obligation has been created. Adarabi, you should argue the other way around. Ela loishna. So therefore, Rava says there's no difference whether he said harei olai or harei zu. He is allowed to swap out that coin. Again, according to Rashi, that would mean he's even allowed to spend the coin and later on make it up with a different coin. According to the Rambam, according to the Radvaz's understanding of the Rambam anyway, it means he can't actually spend it, but it means he could take a different coin and put that one in the pushka, let's say, or give it to the poor person or whatever, and then he's yotze, and then he's allowed to use the original coin.
So that's where the second obligation changes practically.
Practically, maybe it doesn't, but the point is it creates a different kind of obligation in that it's in his reshus as far as tashlum. That when he first pledges the coin to tzedakah, if he says harei olai, there's no particular coin in his possession that now belongs to tzedakah. Right. He has a generalized obligation to give X amount to tzedakah,
right.
As opposed to when he said harei zu, and then he spends that coin, now he has a new status. Now it come alei v'reshus le'inin tashlumin, Rashi says. That coin now became in his reshus. Having left his reshus to the reshus of tzedakah, it now returned to his reshus insofar as he's chayav in tashlumin for it. So it created a new status. Could be maybe psychologically it makes it more that he feels. Either way, he has to pay back the money, but it's still a different obligation that was created. Okay, anyway, Robert says the halacha is it doesn't make a difference. Okay. So that would be similar to this, basically. I mean, there you have somebody else's das involved, so maybe there would be an Indian to use that particular one since he gave it to you. I don't know.
Are you actually saying that by creating a second obligation, if he had made another Aveira, is that what we're saying?
No, we're not saying that. No, we're not talking about whether he made another Aveira. We're saying that with Harei Zu, a new obligation is created by him spending it. With Harei Olai, no new obligation is being created. The same obligation that he had before he spent it, he has after he spent it. So you could argue, when do you allow him to spend it when that at least creates a new obligation on him? Maybe you shouldn't allow it when it's not creating a new obligation. What's Zucker gaining from it? So the answer is, Loishna, it doesn't make a difference in either way. In fact, Tanya Kavasei de Rava, we learn a Braisa like what Rava says. The Braisa says, Neder Zucker, that in Hektish Zucker. A Neder is Zucker, Hektish is not Zucker. So the Braisa is very, very obscure. What does it mean? My corner. Lo neder v'lo hektish tzedakah. Neder and hektish are neither of them are tzedakah. So what do you mean neder is tzedakah and hektish is not tzedakah? El olav hafi kamar. Presumably, this is what the braisa means. Tzedakah Harei B'Val Ta'achar, when it comes to pledging tzedakah, there is a mitzvah of B'Val Ta'achar, just like there is by Korbanos. You're not allowed to delay it more than a certain amount of time, which the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah. With Korbanos, you have 3 regalim. When it comes to tzedakah, actually, you have less than that, because there are always aniyim around. So therefore, as soon as there are aniyim, if you didn't give them, you're over on B'Val Ta'achar. The Eina to Hektish. So it, on the other hand, Tzedakah is not like Hektish. So the Braisa says, Neder Tzedakah, the Ein Hektish Tzedakah. What it means is Tzedakah is like a Neder, for example, for a carbon, in the sense of Baal Ta'achar, but it's not like Hektish. When it comes to, if you say this coin is Hektish, you are not allowed to use that coin. There's no such thing, I can use that coin and then I'll give a different coin to Hektish instead. On the other hand, the implication of the Braisa is like Robert is saying, a coin of Tzedakah, you would be allowed to use it. You don't have to give that very same coin. And since the Braisa is not differentiating between Harei Alai and Harei Zu, and in fact the word Neder usually means Harei Alai, then that means that either way it's much.
If today, if someone gives a sucker to make it Hektish, what would happen?
Well, nowadays if a person makes something Hektish, you'd have to put it in Nizek, because we don't know if that's Hektish. But if a person says, I'm going to give this quarter to tzedakah, he doesn't have to give that very same quarter. He could take it and he could give a different quarter. According to Rashi and many of the Rishonim, he could actually spend that quarter and give the quarter to tzedakah and give a different quarter for tzedakah at some later date. According to the Radbaz, he can't actually spend the quarter first, but he can take a different quarter out of his pocket and give that one to tzedakah, and then he's allowed to, and then he was yotzei. Okay. Fine. More on this topic. Okay, so Amar Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, I'm Ritzel Shmaita Kamedir of Zvi Min Hauda. I told over this whole discussion, including Rava's statement, to Rav Zvi Min Hauda, Amar, and he says, after Nehochi Masnisula, you and your yeshiva, and from Padissa, I guess, you learned the sugya this way, and that's why you had a problem with Rava's statement, and not yet a problem. Well, yeah, that you had the Zaira's statement, and then you had Rava's question on it, and a Braisa in support of Rava. Anan, Hochi Masinam, we in Nahada learned the whole thing more straightforwardly. We didn't learn that Rav Nachman said Mutal Shanoisa without any details, and we needed Rav Yechanan to clarify the details, and we needed Rav Be'era and Rava to clarify more details. We in Nahada learned it straight out. Om Rav Nachman, Om Rav Babu, Om Rav, Ha'oima Stella Zuva Tzedakah, Mutal Shanoisa, he's allowed to swap it out, Bein La'asna, Bein La'acha, whether it's for himself or to lend to somebody else, Bein Omar Harei Olai, Bein Omar Harei Zu, whether he says that's an obligation on me or he says it's coin.
So it
amounts to the same thing. I mean, the Gemara came up with that conclusion, but Rav Zvid Minahada is telling him, we in Nahada didn't even have this whole back and forth that you had in your yeshiva and Kompadissa, because we, to begin with, learned that Rav Nachman's statement included all the relevant details.
So the
halacha is that you're allowed to swap it out, and the halacha also is, Bein La'asme Bein La'acher, and it doesn't matter whether you said Harei Alai or Harei Zu, whether you said I owe a dollar to Tzedakah, or whether you said this dollar should go to Tzedakah, either way, you're allowed to give a different dollar to Tzedakah, and you're allowed to lend that one out, It's based on the last price and another statement, yeah. Turn it up on them. We learn in a price, the more dinim about Tzedakah, Sela Zula Tzedakah. Suppose a person says this Sela is the Tzedakah. So Abshalai Boskali De Gabai, until the coin reaches the Gabai, the collector of Tzedakah, Mutu L'Shanoita, you're allowed to change it out. Misha Boskali Yad Gabai Osu L'Shanoita. Once it comes to the Gabai's hand, you're not allowed to change it out. Now, what does it mean to change it out? Tosfos has a long discussion over here. Does it mean like L'Shanoita, like we said before, as far as lending it out and then using a different coin instead? Or does it mean something even more than that? Does it mean maybe that you would be allowed to do, but maybe what we're talking about is to swap it out for another mitzvah. Like this, for example, the person originally gave it for tzedakah that it was meant to be for the aniyim of the city. Are we saying, are we talking about the Gabbai Tzedakah maybe, does that, are we saying maybe that before it reaches the Gabbai Tzedakah, you would be allowed to decide that I'm going to use it for a different mitzvah instead. Instead of giving it to the poor people, I'm going to use it, let's say, towards the upkeep of the shul or whatever. Okay. So the question. No, we're not saying, but no, what we're saying, in other words, that's the point. In other words, so according to one explanation in Tosfos, what it means is that before you gave the coin, you originally said, for example, I'm promising to give this coin to Tzedakah, and Tzedakah usually means to the poor people, and now before you gave it to the Gabbai Tzedakah, you said to yourself, you know what, instead of giving it to the poor people, I'm going to give it to the shul. So according to that, it would be mutter. On the other hand, once it reaches the Gabbai, then it would be also to do that. So according to that, the Shamo thing is to change it to another mitzvah, as opposed to taking it for himself and then paying back another one, right? So that's Tosfos has a bit of discussion about it. Different other Rishonim and Achronim talk about the ins and outs of it. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, Amy, is that so? Rabbi Yanai Yosef Ufara, Rabbi Yanai was a Gabbai Tzedakah, and he used to do that. He would borrow money from Tzedakah and then pay it back. The answer, and we just said that the Gabbai is not allowed to do that. The answer is Shiny Rabbi Yanai. It's different in the case of Rabbi Yanai. Actually, what he's doing benefits the aniyim. Jekama demashi, because the longer of a delay there is, that Rabbi Yanai does not have enough money to give out to the aniyim. Maasi umaisi lahu. He's able to convince more people to give tzedakah, and then he has more eventually to give to the aniyim. In other words, like this, he's able to go to the Baal HaBasim and tell them, we don't have enough. We need X amount for the aniyim of the city, and right now we don't have it. They don't know that it's because he lent that. They don't know because he borrowed some of it. So therefore, that impels them to give more. And then in the end, the tzedakah fund has more to give out to the aniyim. So such a thing is allowed. Apparently, according to Rashi, yes. Yazif Moritz at tzedakah l'tzedakah. He's borrowing. Right, of course, yeah. And in fact, the Beit Yosef says, why would he do it this way? Why doesn't he just tell them straight out? And the reason is, the Beit Yosef talks about a couple of reasons. One of them being, he didn't want to lie flat out and tell them there's less in there than there is. So like this, the fact is there is less in there. When he tells them there's only X amount in there, he's telling them the truth. There is only X amount in there. He's not telling them why there's only X amount, but yeah. Okay. Yeah, basically. Okay. Turn it up. We learn in a braise. If a Jew donates a menorah, which is a candelabra, or a ner, which is like a single candlestick or lamp or whatever, lebeis hakneset, so shul. Also the shanoisa, you're not allowed to swap it out. And there, everybody agrees that l'shanoisa means like to use it for a different purpose. One second. Sovra p'chiyah b'meimar. Sovra p'chiyah b'abba l'meimar. So the p'chiyah b'abba thought to say, you're not allowed to swap because it already reached the basic message. But sovra p'chiyah b'abba l'meimar. Lo shnol ibar harashus. Lo shnol ibar mitzvah. When we're saying you're not allowed to swap it out to use it for something else, for some other purpose, that he thought to say it means whether you're going to use it for a dvar harashus. Let's say, for example, one of the members of the shul is going to take it home to use it for himself, and then bring a different one to shul instead, or for dvar mitzvah. Let's say, for example, they need it that you wouldn't be allowed for dvar harashus or for dvar mitzvah. Amar Rav Ami, however, Rav Ami tells him, Hachi Amar Rav Yechanan. This is what Rav Yechanan said. Lo shonu el dvar harashus. This rule only applies if you're taking it l'dvar harashus for a mundane purpose. Abul l'dvar mitzvah, but if you're taking it from the shul for a dvar mitzvah to use it for a different mitzvah, mutar l'shanoisa, then you're allowed to swap it out. You're allowed to take it and replace it with a different one. And we know that midah amar of Asi amar of Yechanan. We know that on the basis of what Rav Asi says in the name of Rav Yechanan, ovid kichavim sheis not of menorah iner l'beis hakneset. If a goy donates a candelabra or a candlestick to shul, then it depends. Ad shel nishtaka shem ba'aleha, up to the point where the name of the owner is forgotten from it. In other words, there comes a point when somebody donates something to a shul. Now, we're not talking like, for example, nowadays, a person donates something to a shul, usually they engrave their name on it. But let's say, for example, they don't always, or in those days, they certainly didn't always. So let's say they didn't. So at the beginning, everybody will remember, this is the candelabra that Joe the Goy donated. But eventually, after a couple of years, eventually it gets forgotten by everything. That's called nishtaka shem ba'aleha. So until Mishnaka Shem Ba'aleha, also the Shanoisa, then you're not allowed to swap it out.
Until
the name of the owner. As long as everybody remembers this is the candelabra that Tony donated to our shul, then you're not allowed to swap it out. What? The Pashtus. The Pashtus, I guess it doesn't matter, but I don't, no, actually maybe. That's a good point, actually, based on what the Gemara is going to say. Well, the Gemara is going to mention his feelings, actually, maybe, yeah. Okay. So until Nishtaka Shem Ba'aleha, also Roshanaisa, Misha Nishtaka Shem Ba'aleha, once people forget the fact that Tony gave it, Mutar Roshanaisa, then you're allowed to swap it out. So So we have to ask Lamai, when we say you're allowed to swap it out, meaning you're allowed to take it and somebody else, let's say, can start using it in their house and they're going to bring a different one instead, Lamai, what purpose are we talking about? Are we just talking about for an optional purpose like that, like for example, somebody taking it to their house? My area over Kechavim. Then why Dafka mention the case where a guy donated it? Wouldn't the same din be after you throw Nami? The Pashas, the same din would apply if a Jew donated it also. Elo the Dvar Mitzvah. Pashtus, the distinction must be if you're taking it for a Dvar Mitzvah. For example, you're selling it to raise money for some mitzvah. So we're saying as long as people remember that that this particular guy donated it, then you're not allowed to do that. Now, what would be the reason? The timer. Now, why would there be a difference between whether a Jew donated or a guy donated in that case? Because the Oyv to Chodim who depoin. Because a guy is going to complain. If the guy ever finds out that we took his candelabra and sold it, even the Dvar Mitzvah, he's going to start complaining. He's going to, it's going to make a Chilul Hashem, basically. And the Rambam explains, so Rashi uses the expression that he's going to complain, Lama Shinisim Mashin Asasim. Why did you swap out what I gave? The Rambam says, he's going to say, look at this, the Jews took something that I donated to their shul, and they used it for themselves. So it's going to make a Chilul Hashem. Well, no, therefore it has a limit only until Mishtak HaShemot. Once Nishtaka Shmoy, that's what we're saying, because once Nishtaka Shmoy, then everybody forgot that he gave it, so therefore, yeah. And that's where it comes in, what you're saying about maybe if he died, that would also be considered Nishtaka Shmoy, yeah, because he's not going to be around to complain anymore. Avo Yisrael, but when it comes to a Jew, Deloi Poni, a Jew is not going to complain like that, because he knows that we did it for Dvar Mitzvah. Some of the Rishonim explain that the reason is because Vachachila, when he gives it as a donation to the shul, he's giving it al das that the Shiva Torah here, that the heads of the Kehillah can do with it whatever they feel is necessary for the good of the Kehillah. Others explain that, okay, if a Yid complains about it, he's likely to be a Yisrael Mumer anyway. He's that's not going to cause a Chilul Hashem. Everybody knows, fine, Yisrael Mumer, we know not to pay attention to him, as opposed to a Goya. Okay, anyway, the point is, Avi Yisrael Deloi Poi Shapur Domi. Apparently, the idea is that, that if it was a Jew, it wouldn't matter whether Nishtak HaShmoy or not. You would be allowed to use it for a Dvar Mitzvah or a Dvar Harashot. If a Yid gave it, then you're allowed to change it either for Dvar Mitzvah or for Dvar Harashot. So actually the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that we do make this distinction with the Nishtak HaShmoy if you're going to use it for a Dvar HaRashut. If they're planning to use it for optional purposes, then if Nishtak HaShmoy you're allowed to, and if not Nishtak HaShmoy, let me see if I can find it real quick in Shulchan Aruch. Oh, these halachas. What? Because, first of all, I did look it up before, but also it's in Ein Mishnah Mitzvah. Okay, so let's see. Here's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. If a Jew donates, for example, a candelabra or candlestick to shul, if Nishtak HaShem Ba'aleha, then they're allowed to swap it out even for Dvar HaRashus. And the Ramah adds, even if the person who donated is complaining, if not Nishtak HaShem Ba'aleha, then they can't for Dvar HaRashus, but they could for Dvar Mitzvah. If it was a goy, on the other hand, then even for Dvar Mitzvah, as long as not Nishtak HaShem Ba'aleha, then you can't. And then it adds another detail from the Yerushalmi. If the name of the donor is engraved on it, then it's still not considered Nishtak HaShem Ba'aleha. So then, in other words, you would have to keep it there indefinitely. For in the case of a Jews, you could eventually swap it out for a Dvar Mitzvah. In the case of a Goyes, you never could. I think there are some of the Achronim who say that even so, maybe if his name is engraved on it, but we're talking like, 100 years later and nobody remembers who this guy was, then maybe you'd be allowed to. Yeah, let's say whatever. So here's a case, the Gemara says, Sha'azrak Taya, Sha'azrak, that was his name, the Arab, Indeb Shragel Abeknis, he was an Arab, Taya means an Arab, Taya means an Arab, Indeb Shragel Abeknishta, he donated a candlestick to a local shul, the Abeknishta did Rabbi Yehuda, so the shul of Rabbi Yehuda in Babel. There is, by the way, the Rav Levick mentioned briefly in one place in a letter of his to the Rebbe, he mentions a Rishima of his that he had about the deeper reason why this guy's name is mentioned in the Gemara, unlike we have many stories in the Gemara where it gets mentioned a goy without giving his name or whatever. So unfortunately, that Rishima is lost. We have a brief reference to it in another place, where he says that the name Shazrach has a gematria of three things that Hashem created at the beginning of the world, Mayim, Rakia, and that is that the name of the people, it comes from Kaya equals 100, representing the 100 brachas. But he doesn't elaborate on there. He apparently elaborated in this other Rishima, which unfortunately is lost. Anyway. Okay, so he donated this candlestick to the Tzur of Yehuda's shul. Shanye Rachva, the Rachva, who was the gabbai of the shul, changed it. He swapped it out for another one. The Ikbad Rava, or Rabba, it says on the side, and Rabba was upset about that because he said, go, you're not allowed to, as long as not the Shtak or Shmai. Ikbad Amri Shanye Rava, the other version is the other way around. Rava, or Rabba, is the one who swapped it out. The Ikbad Rachva, and Rachva was the one who was upset about it. And a third version, the Ikud Amri, Shani Chazni, the Pumbedisa, it was neither one of them. It was the Shamoshim of Pumbedisa swapped it out, the Ikbad Rahba, the Ikbad Rabba. And according to the third version, both Rahba and Rabba were angry about that they did that. So the fact is, what were they thinking? Mandashanye, now whoever it was, according to the first version Rabba, according to the first version Rahba, second version Rabba, the third version, the Shamoshim of Pumbedisa, what were they thinking? They thought because the Shazrach is Shchiach, because he's not commonly found in town. He's an Arab. He travels all over the place on business. He's not necessarily going to come here again. So therefore, it's considered Nishtak HaShmaz. Oman de Ikbad, but whichever one, Rava or Rachva or both of them, that was masked about it. Sava, he thought, okay, sometimes he may come to town and he'll show up in shul and he'll notice that his candlestick isn't there and he's going to be upset. And it's going to cause a scandal. It's going to cause a good one. Apparently, well, it doesn't elaborate whether it was a bar mitzvah or the bar or a shush, but yeah, the halacha is the same even for a bar mitzvah. So whoever it was that swapped it out thought that it would be allowed because it is considered neshaka shmoy, even though Shazrach is alive and well, because when did he come to Pumbedisa? Not very often. And on the other hand, Rachba and Rabba pointing out, yeah, but on the other hand, if he does come, then it's going to cause a chilasha. Fine.
What about if you take the candelabra and you replace it with something else at the same time?
That's what we're talking about. That's what we mean to swap it out. That's what we mean. It doesn't mean you leave the shul without a candelabra. No, the pastor is going to recognize whether this is a candelabra that he donated or not. Okay. Mishnah says, we learned the other day, a goitis is somebody who's on not just on his deathbed, a shivmana is on his deathbed, but he's drawing his last breath. Many of them, of course, explain the word goitis is related to the word negus bikdeo, which means stirring the pot. This is like the person is like stirring up the phlegm and whatever in his throat trying to breathe. Anyway, that's a goitis. V'hayoytze lehoreg, or somebody who's going out to be executed. Lo nidar v'lo nerach. You cannot, there's no declaring their domim, there's no pledging their domim, and there's no pledging their erach. They have no domim, they have no erach at that point. Because they're about to die. No, it's not so obvious. As a matter of fact, first of all, it's not so simple. We're going to have different opinions about it. But besides that, actually, it's interesting. The Rambam makes a distinction and says this is only when you talk about the Yosel HaHorig, we're talking about where he's going to be executed by Beis Din. Because Beis Din, once they've decided that he's going to be executed, that's it. The only way they're going to pardon him is if there comes up evidence to the contrary, and that's not very likely after they went through a whole trial. As opposed to if he's being executed by a Goyish court or a Goyish king or what have you, they could always change their mind at the last moment. Somebody could bring them a fat bribe or they could whatever, you know, so then we wouldn't say that he's considered a dead man walking. Okay. Anyway. So Lenida Vlenerach, there's no domim and there's no erach for this person. Rav Chanina ben Akavya Omer, Nerach. Rav Chanina ben Akavya says no, he does have an erach. Rav Nesha Dobam Sivan. Okay, I agree he says he doesn't have domim because nobody would buy a person who's going to die in the next couple of minutes. But he has an erech because the Torah fixes an erech for him, and that doesn't matter. He's alive, yeah. He's still physically alive, yeah. Rav Yossi says, Noder Umarech Umakish, a person in this situation is able to make a neder of domim, is able to pledge an erech, and is able to be makish. Yama Machlok is showing him, by the way, whether Rav Yossi is talking about both the Goyset and the Yossi Lahoreg, or is he maybe only talking about the Yossi Lahoreg? Because the argument is, maybe the ghost is not completely in his right mind. Maybe he wouldn't be able to be Noder or Makdish or what have you. Tosfos earlier in the parak, well, that's the question. So Tosfos earlier in the parak brings from a Yerushalmi, or from a Masechta Smachos, that says that he could, and Tosfos says on the grounds of, with the famous expression, Ami Rossi la Gavoya, Kimisi Rossi la Hedyesh, when a person says something to Hektish, when he makes a pledge to Hektish, it's the equivalent of handing it over to the Hedyesh, and therefore, in other words, it was a valid transaction. So, they're talking about as a ghost. So we're talking about Isaac. So Tosafot learns that even a Gosis, that Tosafot learns that a Yosef is saying that a Gosis could be Noger and Marich, etc. And many other Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, he could be Makdish and Marich. A Yosef Lahorig could be sure, because a Yosef Lahorig is in his right mind, but a Gosis not. No. But what damages we're going to talk about in the Gemara? We haven't gotten damages. Because he is, I mean, he's not, you know, he hasn't gone crazy or anything. I mean, I'm sure he's very worried. But on the other hand, you know, it's not like he's lost his ass. Okay, so Rav Yossi says no to the Marcha Makdish. Again, some of the Shonim, so the Tosafot hold that means both the Gosis and the Yotzei L'Horeg. Others say it means only the Yotzei L'Horeg. The Imhizik Chayev, and also Rav Yossi adds, if he calls somebody a Hezik at that point, then he is Chayev, which we're going to talk about the details of that in the Gemara. Why, and we're going to talk about, yes, yeah, so we're going to talk about why there's a Hezik. Think about it. The Shlema Gosis Lo Nidur. I can understand why you cannot pledge Domim of a Gosis, Delan by Domim, because he doesn't have any Domim. Nobody would buy a Gosis. The Lo Nerach, and you can understand why the Tanakhama says he doesn't have an Erach, Delan by Hamad of Arach. Not because he's not still alive. Of course he's physically alive, but because we learned earlier in the Perek that if, we're learning in the next Perek, that if the one who pledged the Erech can't afford it, then we have to stand up the person who he pledged in front of the Kohen, and like this, with a Gosis, you can't do that. He's considered Kahal Chodobah, that's the point, but you can't do Hamad of HaRocha with him, especially because you're not even allowed to touch a Gosis because you may hasten his death that way. So, Ela Yotzei L'Horeg, so that, so on the Gosis, I can understand the true dinim that the Tanakhama says. Lo Nido, because he has no Domim, and Lo Nerach, because you can't stand him up in front of the Kohen. Ela Yotzei L'Horeg. The Shlema Lo Nido, I can understand why you can't be Nidor. Again, the Lav Bar Domim, who he has no Domim, nobody would buy him under those conditions. Ela Lo Nerach, Hamai Lo. Why can't he be Nerach? He's still alive. The reason is... No. Erech is the fixed amount that the Torah says for a person. 50 sell up for a man between 20 and 60, 30 for a woman between 20 and 60. Or 30. He's alive, so he should have an Erech. Yeah. So the answer is the Tanya. The reason why not is because we learn in a Braisa. Minayin hayotzei l'horeg. How do we know if a person is going out to be executed? Again, as the Rambam says by Beis Din. But Omar Erki Olai, and he says, I pledge my own Erech. Or actually, Shittim Kobetes, and on the side over here, it says a different view, so that somebody else says, I pledge his Erech. How do we know Shaloi Amaklum, that what he said doesn't count for anything, and he doesn't owe any Erech? Time of Leimah, if you have a pasuk near the end of Chumash Vayikra, a couple of took him from the end, Kol Cherem Lo Yipodra. The whole pasuk goes, Kol Cherem Asher Yochram Min Adam, any Cherem that is Yochram from a person, Lo Yipodra, it cannot be redeemed, most Yumas, he is to be executed. So what does that mean? It means Cherem is a word that means putting to death. Like you have, for example, Vacharamti Yatharehem. So what it means is, so the Gemara is explaining, what it means is, if a person is Cherem Min HaAdam, that he's being taken out to be executed, Lo Yipodeh, right. He cannot be redeemed, in other words, he has no Erech, because, most Yomos, because he's being put to death. So that's what we learn, so therefore we learn that he has no Erech, from those words, Kol Cherem Lo Yipodeh. Actually, every condemned person, Lo Yipodeh, he cannot be redeemed. There is, by the way, an interesting idea that the Shulte HaGiborim, which is one of the Pirushim on the Rif, the Shulte HaGiborim brings an idea when a person pledges an Erech, his own, somebody else's, or whatever, in effect, what he's doing is momentarily he's being Makdish himself or that other person. Then you Makdish something, you have to redeem it from Hekdish. So the Torah fixes values, how much you should redeem himself or the other person or whatever from Hekdish. So therefore, that's what it means by Lo Yipodeh. In that sense, this person... You're going to say that he was donated to Hefdish, and now you're going to be poor to him, but you can't, because Kol Cherem Lo Yipodeh, therefore, because Mois Yomos. The Rambam, by the way, gives us as an example of the idea. Sometimes you have, the Rambam says, sometimes the Torah will say Lo something, but it's not a Lo Yipodeh, it's a statement of fact. This is an example, the Rambam says, in the Shoshim, to say, it's not a Lo Yipodeh, Lo Yipodeh, you're not allowed to redeem. It's a statement of fact. Lo Yipodeh, he cannot be redeemed because he will not be redeemed. He cannot be redeemed because most of them. Because he's got no value, exactly. Because he's going to be put to death. Yoho, I feel a kodim shenigma din. You would think the same din applies even before the gemar din, even before he's been sentenced to death. No, tamablaima min ha'odam. You would think that maybe kol cheirem, because he's already kol cheirem, because he's already subject to the death penalty. But okay, well, wait, okay, but you would think he's almost. But no, Tamil Bama, Min Ha Adam, but like Kol Ha Adam. But the Pasuk doesn't just say Kol Chayim Lo Yipad. It says Kol Chayim Min Ha Adam. Min is a mute, so it only applies to some Adam, not all of them. So therefore, there's a difference whether there was Gemara Din or not. Okay, so that's where we know that he doesn't have an Erech. Now the question is, what about according to Rav Chanina ben Akavya? He says he does have an erech because an erech is a fixed value in the Torah, and therefore it doesn't depend whether he actually has a monetary value or not. Okay. So according to him, what is he doing with the pasuk kol chayim? The answer is v'chidatanya. He uses it for what we learn in a different place. Rabbi Shmuel b'nei Shmuel Rabbi Yosef ben Brei Kohen, like this. We find a case where a person is chayav misa b'dei shemayim, shenosin momen or miskafa lahem. They are able to pay money and thereby they have a kapala. What are we talking about? The Torah tells us in Parashat Mishpatim that if a person, that if Reuven's shur kills Shimon, or to be exact, actually, if Reuven's shur is a muad, so it killed three different people, it killed Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, Reuven, if the pasuk says, I show you stock over gamba all of your must, the owner is liable to the death penalty. So it doesn't mean he's executed by base. It means he's chayiv misa b'dei shemayim. But then the next pasuk continues, im kofer yushat olav. That's when a kofer is placed upon him, a kofer is exacted from him, and he pays back, and that takes away his obligation of misa b'dei shemayim. So we see that somebody who's chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, shenosin momen, they pay money, or miskapalahem, and thereby they have a kapara. Shenema in kofer yushat olav. The pasuk says, if a kofer is imposed on him, it's not an if, by the way, it's a fact that it has to be imposed on him, when a kofer is imposed on him, right? Yahoo afi de odom sin. You would think maybe the same thing applies when a person is chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, that he should also be able to pay a kofer. No, tamad lema, kol chayim, lo yipadeh. Therefore, the pasuk says, any chayim, anybody who's condemned to death cannot be redeemed. Yeah. Ainly elamisis hamuris continues the bright that continues the small but no sure beyond the breaker. Okay, so you would think maybe that only applies to harsher averus, shaloi nitna shigagosim the kapara, the kind where if you did them b'shogig there's no kapara. So Rashi gives examples over here. For example, a person curses Hashem, a person curses his father. There's no b'mezid he's chayiv nisa. There's no such thing that if he did it b'shogig that he should be chayiv achatas for it. Nothing. Because the rule is that in order to be chayav chatas, it has to be something where zonei kares v'shem zotei chatas. Only if the mezid he be chayav kares, and you don't have that, so we don't have that. But these things, yeah. So the point is, so therefore these things for shogeg, you don't have a chatas. Also, megadif is not there's not a mice. Anyway, the point is that you would argue that mrs. chamurais. Where you don't have a possibility of being machapa over the shogig, then you could argue that's where the pasuk is telling him that he can't pay a kofer either. Mrs. Kalos shenitna shigazos on the kapara minayin. How do we know the same thing applies to the lesser kinds of averus for a chayiv misa, the kind where you have a kula in them, where you can be machapa on them? Rashi gives an example. For example, Ritzayach, the mezid is chayiv misa, but for shogig goes to Ari Mikva. Also, for example, Ovidabed Azara, Machal Shabbos, all the different examples. Yeah, Tosfos actually in Ksubas argues a little bit with Rashi. Tosfos says maybe when we say over here Nitna Shigas on the Kapara, we mean specifically with a Chatas. So a Ritzayach would not be in that category because he doesn't mean a Chatas if it was a Shogeg. He instead goes to Arim Mikvah. Whatever. The point is there are harsher ones and there are more lenient ones. How do you know the more lenient ones have the same din? Minayin Tamal Bama Kol Chayim. Therefore, the person is any Chayim. So as long as he's Chayim Misa. No. That was when we were saying about the erech of the person. Remember, Rav Chanina ben Akavya is arguing on that in our Mishnah. So he's learning like Rabbi Shmuel ben Yisrael, Rabbi Yechon ben Breika, that the pasuk has nothing to do with erechin. The pasuk has to do with teaching us that people who are Chayim Misa based in cannot pay money and get out of it. You would have thought the same way as you see. That's the same way as you see. That by a shor amur, he's able to. You would think by other things also.
And from the pasuk kol
rechem. So therefore, the pasuk kol chayim tells us otherwise. Okay. I mean, the truth is actually, when it comes to it, Ritzayach, you actually have an explicit pasuk, and you have an explicit pasuk in Masay, an explicit pasuk, and that say over there that you can't take kosher for a deliberate Ritzayach to pater him from Nisa, or for Ritzayach for shogeg to pater him from Golos. Fine, but as far as other Mrs. Hamuris and Mrs. Kalos, you wouldn't know. So therefore, the pasuk tells you that it applies to them also. Well, yeah, it's true. Okay. Yeah, you have to go to Aldam. Okay. All right. Fine. So those are the two different opinions in our Mishnah. So again, Tanakama says that a Yoytzil, a Horig, has no Erech on the grounds of the Pasuk Kol Chayrim. Reb Chanina ben Akavya learns like Reb Shmuel ben Osher Reb Yechon ben Breifa's understanding of the Pasuk, that it's got nothing to do with Erechin, it's teaching us a whole different din, and therefore he says that a Yotzei Lahara does have an Erech. Then we continued in the mission. Reb Yossi Omer noted a marichula. We said Reb Yossi says that a person in this condition can make a neder and can pledge an erech. And again, we said, is he talking only about the Yotzei Lahareg? Is he talking maybe also about the Goyis? Anyway, the question is, usually when a mishnah or a brisa says so and so Omer, usually it means he's coming to argue, as opposed to when it's Omar so and so, it means that he's making a new statement. Now, over here it says, Reb Yossi Omer, which implies he's arguing with the Tanna Kamma. Yeah. So the question is, the Tanna Kamma Mika Omer Deloy? The Tanna Kamma didn't say anything about that he can't do these things. What do you mean, Reb Yossi Omer? Yeah, so what, the answer is, Ella, no, like, the Noder Umarich Umakish Kulam Lissi. You're right. And the fact that a Yossi Lahoreg and maybe also a Gosis can mean Noder and Marich and Makish, both the Tanna Kamma and Reb Yossi agree on that. There's no machlokas in that. He pligi the imhivit. The machlokas, which is why we're using the expression of Yossi Omer, is if he was mazik. If on the way to be, if when he was a goyset, or when he was Yossi Lahorig, if he was mazik, does he have to pay? That would be the machlokas. Tanakama saw that in Tizik ain't a chayiv b'shlumin. The Tanakama holds if he was mazik, somebody is not chayiv b'shlumin. But Rabbi Yossi saw that in Tizik chayiv b'shlumin.
Why should he not be?
That's what we have to figure out. The ma'ikum, what is the underlying machlokas? Amar Rabbi Yossi. The milva al peg goyven min ayoshin come with me. The underlying machlokas is when you have a verbal loan. So like this, in this case, it's considered a loan in effect because he owes money, and there wasn't any amida b'din. He wasn't actually brought to Beis Din yet before he died,
right.
So you can't say that it was actually written down anywhere that he has to pay.
Right.
So it's as if it was a milva al peg. Can you collect such a thing from Yoshin? And basically, that really depends on another issue, which is the concept of shibud min haTorah or not, which the Gemara discusses at the end of Bava Basra and a few other places in Shas.
On the Karka or what?
No, we're talking about a shibud in general. Does it apply min haTorah or not? So, that's not the machlokas whether it does. So if you say so, that's the question. Therefore, would it apply to the Yoshin? Tanakama sova milva al peh in a gozum na yoshin. The Tanakama holds that a verbal milva you cannot collect from yoshin. Therefore, the guy's dead now. Yeah, when he was mazik, he was alive, but now he's dead. You can't collect from him. You're only collecting from his yoshin, and you can't collect a milva al peh from his yoshin. So therefore, nothing doing. Rav Yossi sova milva al peh gozum na yoshin. Rav Yossi holds you could. Therefore, what will happen is the case will be brought to Beis Din after the guy dies. They will declare that he was guilty because he had to aid him. And therefore, then they'll tell the Yoshim they have to pay up. That's one explanation. Rava Omar. Rava gives a different explanation, or Shittim Kabbalah changes it to Rabba. The Kula Alma Milval Pair in a Gozum in a Yoshin. Maybe everybody agrees that a Milval Pair in and of itself you cannot collect from Yoshin. But Hacha, but over here the Machlokas is a little bit different. The Milva Ksuva Batoda Kamithim. The Machlokas is, what about when you have a Milva that is written in the Torah? We have this concept in Bechoris. We talked about it in connection with the five Sloyim for Pidyon HaBen. When you have something where it's written in the Torah, so we talked about a few different explanations, what that means exactly. Does it mean the fact that the Torah says you have to pay five Sloyim, or in this case, the fact that the Torah says you have to pay the Nezik? Does it mean that without the Torah saying it, does it mean not necessarily the specific amount, but the point Tosfos learns that it means not necessarily the specific amount, but without the Torah telling you, you wouldn't know that you have to pay at all. So whatever it is, the point is, so it's considered written in the Torah. So that's the machlokas. The Tanakama sova milva ksuva b'Torah la ksuva b'shtar jamya. The Tanakama will hold that just because it's written in the Torah is not as if it was written in a shtar. It's still considered an oral debt, and as a verbal debt, as we just said, everybody agrees you can't collect that from the ocean. Rav Yossi sova ksuva b'shtar jamya. Rav Yossi will hold, once it's written in the Torah, it's as if it was written in a shtar, therefore you can collect it from the ocean, because for a milva in a shtar, you can collect from the ocean. There she would definitely apply.
Why does Tanakama hold that it doesn't?
Because he is very nice, it's written in the Torah. That doesn't make it milva ksuva b'shtar. One idea behind shibud is that one idea is when there's a shtar, then there's a curl, then it becomes well known that there was a debtor here. So over here, it doesn't become well known. Fine, it says in the Torah that if Reuven is Mazik Shimon, then he has to pay. Now it doesn't mean that everybody knows that in this particular case, Reuven was Mazik Shimon.
When is there a call when the Beis Din announces
it? When the shtar is written, especially since the shtar involved Edim, that creates a call. Now everybody knows that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon or otherwise owes money to Shimon. some reason.
Outside the case, there's no coach.
But outside of that, yes. So over here, no, we're talking before it comes to base game.
Yeah.
So that's the idea behind Sheboard. So therefore, over here, just because it's written in the Torah, the China Camel will say, so what? Everybody knows the basic principle that if Reuben is Mazik, Shimon, he owes Shimon money. But not everybody knows that this particular specific case. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So therefore, so that would be the Machlokes. So two versions of the Machlokas. Again, Rabbi Yossi's is that they're arguing about Milva Alpeh.
Right.
Rabba's or Rabba's version is that they're arguing about whether a Milva that's in the Torah is considered like it's written in a Shtar.
Okay.
The Ikka Demasni Law Aha. Then there are others who learn this Machlokas of Rabbi Yossi's and Rabba, not in reference to our Mishnah, not in reference to the Machlokas of the Chacham and Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah, but rather in reference to a Braisa. A Braisa says, Hayotzi Lehoreg, if a person is being taken out to be executed, if he, on the way, injures somebody else, then he's chayev to pay. But if another person injures him, then that other person is potter. Although actually it says, I don't remember the source of this, but he's actually not potter from everything. I think maybe Yahya Machlokes about this, actually, I don't remember. But there is at least one opinion that they would be chayev in boshes and in tzar. And again, one opinion that they're potter from everything, and another opinion that they'd be potter from nezek, and from Ripui and Shevet, because there's not going to be any Ripui and Shevet, because the guy's going to be executed, but they would be Chayiv and Sar and Bershon. Anyway, okay, Rav Shimon Elazar, I remember, Rav Shimon Elazar says no. Afu im Chavav Acherim Potter, also he, if he injures other people as Potter, Sholem Nitan Machazoras Amidas Basing. The reason is, Rav Shimon Elazar says, because you're not going to bring him back in front of Basing. In order to judge the case, you would have to have him stand in front of the Basing, because you can't judge somebody when he's not present. And he won't be present, so he's dead. And not that he's dead, but the point is, we're not going to say when he hits somebody and injures him on the way to be executed, we're not going to bring him back in order to judge that new case.
Because
we're not allowed to delay his judgment and his execution unnecessarily. Some of the Mephoshim explain this on the grounds of Tzav al-Chayim. Whatever it is exactly, the point is, once Beis Din has a case in front of them, they have to judge it as fast as possible. I mean, they have to be accurate about it, but they can't delay it just like nowadays. Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, they're on the way. It takes time for them to bring them to the base of skill. I mean, while they're making announcements that if anybody knows any evidence in his favor, come and bring it, et cetera, but they're not, it's not going to be like nowadays in the American system where, you have 5 years till the thing even comes to court, and then he's appealing for the next 20 years, and meanwhile, yeah.
Meanwhile, the person that he hit is going to lose
Okay, so lose the money, but we still don't want to do any idea because of that.
The person
that he injured is going to lose out on that. Okay, so he's going to lose out on that. Can't be helped. Okay, Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that you don't make him pay for any injuries that he caused while he was going out to be executed because you can't bring him back to base. So the question is, what do you mean? The Kval the Tanakama Sovereign Nitzan Lachazara Samidas Beis Din. So what? And the Tanakama would say that you do return into Beis Din. What happened to Inuyad Din? So Omer of Yosef. So Rav Yosef gives the same answer as before. The Milval Peh Gozman and Yoshin Committee. The actual Machloikas has to do with whether a Milval Peh can be collected from Yoshin. Tanakama Sovereign Milval Peh Gozman and Yoshin. The Tanakama holds that you can collect from Yoshin. Therefore, he's liable. He himself is going to be dead, but his Yoshin are going to have to pay. Rav Shimon Elazar Sava ain't a Gozman Yoshin, whereas Rav Shimon Elazar says you cannot collect from Yoshin. Similarly on our Mishnah, he said that the Tanakama of our Mishnah held that you cannot collect a Milval Peh from Yoshin, and Rav Yossi held you could. So the Tanakama of the Braisa holds like Rav Yossi, and Rav Shimon Elazar holds like the Tanakama of our Mishnah. Fine. So that's Rav Yossi's understanding. Rabba says, like he said before, Dekula Alma Milval Peh ain't a Gozman Yoshin. We can say that everybody agrees that you can't collect a Milval Peh from Yoshim, the hach of a milvak silver the Torah silver the shtar from the Sugi. The Machalokah says when a debt is written in the Torah, is it the equivalent of being written in a shtar, and therefore creates a shibud or not? Tanakama sava kis silver the shtar dami. The Tanakama will hold it is. Therefore, you can collect from the Yoshim. But if Shimon Elazar sava lavkis silver the shtar dami, and if Shimon Elazar will hold, you can't. If not, and therefore you can't collect from the Yoshim. Similar to the Machalokah in our Mishnah. Okay. Fine. Now the Gemara says Macy out of contradiction. Tosfos says the contradiction that we're going to ask is on Rabba. Rabba is saying that everybody agrees that Novak, Suvah Batorah, is not considered Suvah Bashar, but I'm going to bring you something that seems to show to the contrary. In fact, Tosfos says, actually, the question could really be on Rabbi Yosef as well, because Rabbi Yosef also is saying that according to the Chachamim, you can't collect from Yoshin, implying that according to them, Shibud Olav D'Araisa, the whole concept of Shibud is not Minatoda, it's only D'Rabbanon, but we're going to see from this coming Braisa that apparently a Shibud is Minatoda. So what is that? The Braisa says, Hachofer Bor B'Shus Arabim, if a person digs a pit in Reshus Arabim, where we know that if an animal falls into that pit and gets killed or injured, he's going to be chayav for whatever happens to that animal. But meanwhile, while he was in the pit digging it out, the Nafal Olav Shur V'Hogoy, if an ox falls on him in the pit and kills him, Potter, then the owner of the ox is Potter, because the other guy had no business digging a pit in Reshus Arabim. And not only that, Elishay met Asher. Not only that, if the Shur itself dies in the fall, Yoshe Balav Baruch Hayavon L'Shamans Meisher L'Balav. The Yoshim of the owner of the pit are going to have to pay the value of the Shur to its owner because their father, their was negligent and then made this pit. Yeah. So therefore, so we see. So according to Rabba, that was saying that everybody agrees that a milvak silver batoda is not a silver bashar, why are we collecting from Yoshim? And even according to Rabbi Yosef, that the machloka says whether you do or not. Okay, but according to the opinion that you don't collect from the Yoshim when the guy himself on his way to be executed was being magic, then why over here do you? The answer is Amar Rav Ilo, Amar Rav, Kesha Amar Badin. Yes, but the case we're talking about over here is there was a chance for Beis Din to judge the case before the guy died. So therefore, now it's already like a mill of a shower, according to everybody. You don't say it's not a mill valpen. Now, of
course,
when Beis Din hadn't judged the case yet, it's considered a milvah pet. Eventually, when it comes to Beis Din, they're going to say that Reuven is liable to pay, the owner, the one who dug the pit. But if they actually judge the case before Reuven died of his injuries, then Reuven is chayav at that point to pay, and then it's considered silver b'shtar. Then that's a debt that transfers to his heirs. So the question is, what do you mean, Rehohogir Tatani? What do you mean? It says the case is that the ox fell on him and killed him, and it's implying that it just killed him right on the spot. Okay, Rav Adar Ba'ava says maybe it doesn't mean it killed him outright. Maybe it means it made him trefa, and then there was still a chance to go to Beis Din and have the case decided. Okay, so the question is, Omer Rav Nachman, didn't Rav Nachman say Toni Choga, that Choga, which is the name of a Tana who taught Braises, or Rav Choga, Shikimu Kubeta says, that he taught a Braise, Mesu Kvore, that the case is not just where the guy died, but where they actually buried him. So how does that work? If they buried him, means he died right there in the pit. So as soon as the ox fell on him, he died, and he was buried under the ox itself in the pit. So then Beis Din didn't have a chance to judge him. The answer is that Hilchasa, you have to say that Halacha would work only in the case, the Yasvi Dayoni Apuma Debeira. Suppose that the Dayonim are sitting right there by the edge of the pit. So as soon as they see the Shur fall in, Right away, they judge the case quickly. There were Edom there, let's say, or there were Edom there. So the Edom immediately tell them what they saw, and the Dayanim immediately say, okay, Reuven, you dug the pit. You're hired for whatever happens to that ox. Meanwhile, within the next couple of minutes, Reuven dies from his injuries. That's Nesu Kavara. He died and was buried there, but in between, in the couple of minutes, between when the Shur fell on him and the Dayanim had him. So that would be the case when we would say that is Yoshim Achai. Not necessarily would we say that if there hadn't been that, because then we would say that it's a mil val peh.
So when Yoshim Achai is when he dug the pit.
He dug the pit. The Shur fell on him. The Yonim were right there. So as soon as they saw it happen, immediately they passed in the case that he's chayav to pay. And then within the next couple of minutes, he died.
So then
the Yoshim Achai have to pay. Now this is not necessarily according to the final halacha, because the actual halacha is first of all you can collect a milvah peh from Yoshim, and second of all I think we do say that a milvah silver batoda is not silver bashar. I don't remember that point, but we anyway say that a milvah peh you can collect from Yoshim because shibud daraisa. We say in Baba Basra in the sugya over there at the end that shibud is daraisa. So not like all Gemara is assuming over here. So therefore, and in fact, in our mission of the halacha is like a Yosi, that if the guy commits a hezek on his way to being executed, then his Yoshim are chayev. Similarly, in this case, the guy dug a pit, then his Yoshim are going to be chayev on the grounds of the milvah peh that was created by the Shur falling in. Even if the Beis Din wasn't right there, even if they only judge the case later on. Okay. Yeah, there can be Egan. Yeah, there have to be Egan. Yeah. Okay. We'll stop over here. We'll continue tomorrow.